This is my story. Beautiful song. I appreciate so much the songs that Sid has led today and the effective job that he's done in doing so. It's an old hymn, and it brings really a question into our mind of what is the story that we're supposed to be telling? What is the story that I'm sharing as I go through life? Sometimes people will ask you, what's your story? That question is not asked of us quite so directly very often, but we get the indirect questions of, where'd you go to school, where do you live, what do you do, all those kind of things that are attempts to find out what our story is, what we really have to share, or what we really are like on the inside. And that kind of sometimes becomes a difficulty for us. What's your story? You don't have time to tell your whole story, so you have to, in some brief presentation, present what you're about. And many of us maybe take a kind of a diversion, and we don't really do that at all. Others of us don't want to be immodest, perhaps, and so we just kind of downplay the idea. A lot of us have significant deficiencies in our lives, and we have a tendency to sometimes emphasize those deficiencies when we describe ourselves. This morning, I'd like for you, if you would, to think about your story. What is it about your life? What is it about you? How are you special and unique? You know, your story is who you are. You go to the doctor, and the doctor wants your medical history. You see a psychiatrist, and he wants to do a psychiatric evaluation. If you're going to apply for a job, they want to see a resume. All of those things are, in various ways, your story. Give us your story in a way that's usable to us at this particular time. Who are you? Where'd you come from? What are you about? What's important in your life? And constantly people are looking at us, and whether they say it out loud or not, they're asking those questions about each of us. There's even become a form of therapy, a narrative therapy. Michael White from Australia and a co-author from New Zealand, I've forgotten his name, really emphasizing rewriting or retelling your story. And that's a fascinating kind of approach. A lot of times people look at us and they assume that they know our story. And that's one of the things that prejudice is about. It's an easy way to know somebody's story, and we keep arguing against that. And the way that you argue against that is you utilize and tell and share that story. This happened to Jesus. I flipped these. In John chapter 4, verse 41, others said, "He is the Messiah." Still others asked, "How can the Messiah come from Galilee?" And a little later in that chapter, they replied, "Are you from Galilee too? Look into it. And you will find that a prophet does not come out of Galilee." What's the problem with those statements? Jesus isn't from Galilee. He was raised early in Egypt. He moved after that time back to Nazareth and to Galilee. But because he came as an adult out of Galilee, the Jewish leaders assumed that he was born up there in the north. He wasn't. He was born in Bethlehem. The fulfillment of the prophecy. I've often wondered if there was ever a single time when one of these Jewish leaders went to Jesus and said, "Where were you born?" Instead, they, based on their assumption, they developed a story. And that's the story that they ran with. That's the story that they were going to use, and the story that was going to be important to them. Our story is powerful. Much of our story is invested in our family of origin. We get our image of ourselves typically from our family. And sometimes that can be really, really helpful, and sometimes that can be a little bit painful and a little bit difficult. We have a tendency to think of our story as our past. Our story is up to this minute. And yet I think when God looks at us, he sees our story as our future and not our past. And this morning, as you think about your story, I'd like for you to think about it. And where does it go from here? Not necessarily where has it been. In John chapter 1, verse 41 and 42, the first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah," that is, the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus. Andrew's always bringing somebody else to the Lord. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas," which when translated is Peter. First thing Jesus does when he meets Simon Peter is change his name. And he changes his name to Rock. Rock solid foundation. Now, as I've mentioned many times before, if you read through the Gospels, you'll find the exact, the opposite description of Peter. That's not who Peter is. That's not what Peter is about. And yet, when you look over into the book of 1 Peter, you see much, much more of that individual. Well, what's Jesus doing here? He's saying, I don't care about your past. I care about your future. It's not what you've been. It's what you can become. And this morning, as you think about your own story, it's a story that isn't finished. Doesn't matter how much time you have left in your life. Your story isn't done. And God's interested in the future part of that story. Second thing that I'd like to emphasize this morning is the fact that our story can be altered. Your story can change. And that's one of the biggest complications between the message of the world and the message of the Bible. Right now, we live in a society that really has a tendency to believe that you are who you are when you came into this world. They were born that way. You have this particular family background thing. You look at alcoholics, and that's a frightening thing to do. You can kind of just really accumulate the various people in your family, and depending on how many of them are alcoholics, your level of likelihood of being that yourself just skyrockets. And we do that with so many different things. And it breeds in us this fatalistic belief. Well, I am who I am. I have this deficiency, or I have that deficiency, and it's going to be that way. And when we look at the way God looks at us, God said through Jesus, you don't have to be who you think you are. You don't have to be who the world thinks you are. You can be different. You can alter your life. Now, there's plenty of evidence to indicate that it's difficult to change. I shared with my Wednesday night class a couple of weeks back. I'd read an article about a very large research group of more than 10,000 people who had open heart surgery. And they had gone back like 3 to 5 years later and evaluated how many of those people had made significant lifestyle changes. It was somewhere around 10%. 1 out of 10 had made significant changes to prevent the disease from reoccurring or from having additional damage. It's difficult to change. And because it's difficult, we have a tendency kind of just to throw in the towel and say, well, it's not going to happen. We look at our story and we say, well, I just am who I am. We look at the Gospels and we see Jesus changing stories on a daily basis. Runs into a blind man. The man is blind at the end of the day. He runs into people who don't understand, like the woman at Samaria. And she is enlightened. All kinds of people run into Jesus, and Jesus does things for them that incredibly and permanently alter their lives, not just physically, but spiritually as well. In Matthew chapter 11, John the Baptist is in prison, and I think he's kind of sending a message to Jesus that says, it's time to get busy, it's time to get after it. When John, who was in prison, heard about the deeds of the Messiah, he sent his disciples to ask, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? Does John not know that Jesus is the Christ? Well, of course he does. He's talked about him in terms of not even being worthy to carry his shoes. He was the one who baptized Jesus and witnessed the manifestation of God's approval and God's statement about Jesus. He knows that Jesus is the Christ. So what's he saying here? Well, he's saying, when's the big thing going to start? You know, when are we going to throw out the Romans? When are we going to take this country back? When are we going to do all those dramatic things that we knew were going to happen when the Messiah came? Jesus replied, some of you may remember, and I don't remember if it's an a cappella song or an AVB song, that Go Tell John. Whenever I read this passage, that song kind of reverberates through my mind. Literally, Jesus says to those guys, says, go tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight. The lame walk. Those who have leprosy are cleansed. The deaf hear. The dead are raised. And the good news is proclaimed to the poor. What's John supposed to know? Jesus is changing lives. These lives are being changed moment by moment, day by day. And the message of that is not just that it happened in that period of time. The message is that's a reality for any of us who need and want to have our lives different. You know, we look at our spiritual situation. What would our spiritual situation be without Jesus? Well, we'd be in a place of doom and gloom. We'd be in a place of expecting the punishment that we deserve. But because of Jesus' intervention, we have good news, literally, because we have been altered. We are now new creations when we come into Jesus Christ, when we contact his blood. The early church changed lives, and you can see numerous examples of that going on. I used to have a friend, he's moved away from the area now. He was a really great guy. He was a successful basketball coach. But in his past, he was really embarrassed of his life when he grew up. His mother, he was raised by a single mother. His mother had a very, very difficult life. She wasn't able to keep things together really all that often. And so basically he was raised as a homeless person. There were times when they had a car and they lived in their car. And he's a successful man. He has a successful job. And he lived in fear that people would find out about his background. And I said to him on several occasions, you don't need to be afraid of that, because that actually is your powerful story. You have a degree. Your spouse has a degree. Both of your children have degrees and are going on to graduate programs. You broke the cycle. You made this incredible change. And people could be excited about knowing your story. And I don't know if he ever actually bought into that or not. And so often we want to bury things and we don't want to talk about those things. We don't want people to know that we have negative things in our background. And the reality is God has taken those things away. God has forgiven those things. And he's allowed us to move on in our lives. We have had those negative things replaced by the good news that Jesus brings to us. So what is our story? Well, the reality is we all have a story to tell. You may think, well, what am I going to say? Sometimes when you try to persuade people to do some form of personal evangelism, they say, well, what should I say? And frequently people want maybe a handout that says, say this, say this, say this, say this. Or maybe some kind of a program. And all of those things can have use in particular situations. But if you look at Jesus, you see that he had kind of a unique way of explaining to people what he wanted them to tell. He wanted them to tell their story. Three times in the book of Acts, Paul is called up on the carpet in dangerous situations. Once before a crowd, once before a king. What's Paul going to say to persuade the crowd? Well, he tells his story. He tells what happened to him. He tells what God has done for him. He gives that story of his life that people are interested in hearing. You can turn to Mark chapter 5, one of my favorite characters. I've nicknamed him George. He was the guy, the demon-possessed guy at Gerasenes. I have difficulty with that word. He lived in the tombs, lived in the cemetery. And it says numerous times they would bind him and then he'd break loose from the chains. And I've mentioned before, don't you know they hated to have a funeral in that town? Because when you had to use the cemetery, you had to bind up George until you could have the service. I imagine they had pretty quick services when it came time to go out to the cemetery. This guy certainly wouldn't have helped local tourism and all those kind of things. But when Jesus shows up, the demon inside of him instantly recognizes Jesus. Then Jesus puts the demon into the pigs, and the pigs destroy themselves, and as a manifestation of what Satan is able to accomplish. But if you go to the end of that segment in Mark chapter 5, go down to verse 18. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah. Start in verse 17. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. They see what's going on, like, would you go somewhere else? We don't need all this drama and all this interaction or all this excitement. But the guy has a totally different perspective. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. I want to go with you. And you can understand why. This dramatic thing has happened in his life. He's changed. His story is going to be totally different from that point forward. And he looks and he says, the safest place for me to be would be with Jesus. And Jesus tells him no. And verses 19 and 20 are just so very powerful. Jesus did not let him, but said, go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. So the man went away and began to tell the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. I read a sermon a few years back. The title of it was basically How to Pick a Missionary. And, choosing this particular missionary is a pretty unique choice. Jesus heals this guy and he says, now, what do I go tell him? Tell him what the Lord has done for you and tell him about the mercy. And that's exactly what we're supposed to do. I don't know what to say. What's God done in your life? Share that with somebody. It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be complex. It doesn't have to be an endless kind of presentation. You can, in a sentence sometimes, express the fact that God has done so very much in your life. We have this story inside of us. And I honestly believe that that story wants to come out. That story wants to be told. And probably you experience those moments where you're tempted to tell your religious story, but you think, well, nobody will be interested. Or maybe somebody would be offended. Or there may be any type of complication there. And so I won't tell my story. We find ourselves choking it down rather than broadcasting it. It's a simple explanation of who we are. What has God done for you? How has your life changed because you belong to God? That's what people literally want to know. Maya Angelou, there is no agony like bearing an untold story inside of you. We can encourage others. We can help others to understand that we don't all come from perfect backgrounds. We can help people to understand that God has this incredible power. We can help others to understand that there's a willingness to create change in our lives. And God provides for us the resources where we're really able to make that happen. We can create situations where we can share our story. In conclusion this morning, I just want to say so emphatically, your life story is changeable. And if you don't believe that, think about the role Satan plays. Satan never believes that the story is over. He never accepts that you are who you are. He's constantly rolling obstacles into your path. He's constantly trying to find new ways to entrap you. He's trying to find ways to destroy you because he knows that your life story can be altered. There's some of you here today that would think, well, maybe because of the number of years that I've been in this world, Satan would finally leave me alone. But he never does. He knows that it's not over until the very end. And God says exactly that same thing to us as well. Won't it be interesting to get to heaven and listen to some of those stories? Mary Magdalene. Bartimaeus, any number of stories. What about the thief on the cross? His life changed at the very last moment, literally. And he went with Jesus to paradise. Lives can change. God can change our lives. And this morning, as you think about your story, the point quite simply is, how does your life need to change? And are you courageous enough to give to God the opportunity to make those changes a reality? There may be any number of things that you need to do, and many of them may be private things. But if there's something that needs to be done publicly, we'd love to help you with that process. And if you'd make that known while we sing this song, we would appreciate it.